July 1st.
Who are you people?
We're here to stop the end of the world.
I can work with that.
James Cameron declares Terminator Genesis has reinvigorated the franchise.
What have they done to my son?
I'm not man, not machine. I'm more.
You're going to love this movie.
Crank it!
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll be back.
Well, small talk hasn't improved.
Terminator Genesis. In real 3D and IMAX 3D. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Directed by Alan Taylor.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good evening, and welcome to this evening's program of Taboo No More. My name is Dr. Jeff Hoffman, your host of the show. This is a production of One World Communications and People to People. Tonight we'll be talking about a very sensitive and serious topic of domestic violence. I'll be joined with my co-host, Hayekel Gizichel, from the mental health counselor from the Northern Virginia Family Service. And we have a special guest and expert tonight, Amelia Misaledis, a social worker in private practice for the last 9 years in a multicultural therapeutic intervention service. She is a certified domestic violence counselor, and in her practice she works with individuals, groups, families, adults, children, developing culturally sensitive and culturally specific interventions dealing with this very sensitive topic of domestic violence. We also have with us Denise Speaks, who's our radio engineer. We'll be speaking with Amelia about domestic violence for the next 20 minutes or so, and then we'll open up the line for callers, and Denise will take those calls at 646-595-4742, and then press 1 to speak with Denise and to go on the line. Okay, Amelia, it's very nice to speak with you this evening. I'm actually calling in live from Addis Ababa, and it's a little early in the morning here, but I'm very glad to have this opportunity to speak with you tonight on domestic violence, this important topic. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a great opportunity to speak with you about this very important topic.
Great. So let's go ahead and get started. How would you define domestic violence? What does that mean when we talk about the topic of domestic violence?
Well, the clinical or behavioral definition of domestic violence is a pattern of assaultive and or coercive behavior, including physical, sexual, and psychological attacks, as well as economic coercion that adults or adolescents use against intimate partners.
So it's more than just physical violence. It can be psychological, even economic pressure on someone, huh?
Right. Domestic violence takes many forms. It's emotional. It could be emotional abuse, economic abuse. In the cases of immigrants, isolating the women or their partners from a support system, lying to them about their immigration status, hiding their passports and legal papers. It takes many forms.
Almost like keeping someone prisoner, it sounds like.
And that does happen here. It has happened that there are many reported cases where people are brought to the United States, for example, and are kept in the home where they have the role of a server in the home almost. And in that, like you say, they are prisoners in their own home. They are not allowed to leave the home without the husband or whoever sponsored them here.
And what are some of the types of domestic violence, such as, can you describe in more detail verbal abuse, physical abuse? What kinds of things do you see in clinical practice?
Well, for example, using intimidation, making her afraid by using looks or actions and gestures, breaking things in the home and destroying her property and things like that. Using isolation, as I said, minimizing or denying the level of abuse that the person is experiencing in the home, making light of the abuse, saying that the abuse didn't happen, or they use the children in the home to control her, saying things like, if you leave or if you report this, I will harm the children. And using general male privileges, treating her like a servant, as I said earlier, making all the big decisions themselves, acting like the master of the castle, using the Islamic abuse.
Those are some forms of psychological abuse. What about physical abuse? What kinds of things do you see?
Oh, there are many forms of physical abuse that we see. That there are a lot of women who end up in the hospital. As you know, in the United States, between 1 in 4 million women are beaten every day.
Wow, that's an incredible statistic.
Yes. A woman is beaten in the Washington, D.C. area. The statistic says every 7 minutes a woman is beaten.
When you say beaten, how does it usually occur? Is it physically hitting someone? Are there weapons involved? What do you see in your practice?
I see in my practice a lot of physical abuse. Oftentimes, women deny and minimize those things, but they have been punched, or of course, there is a whole lot of marital rape that happens in the home. Women who are punched in the face, broken arms, broken legs, or ribs where they have been punched. And a lot of times the women minimize it or try to deny it as to how they sustain these injuries, saying things like, oh, I ran into the door, or I fell down the steps, or something like that. They usually try to hide the reason that they have sustained these injuries.
And that is partly because it's a stigma associated with it. Why would someone be afraid to acknowledge that they've been beaten or abused in some way?
There are multiple reasons for that. Oftentimes, women from traditional cultures tend to blame themselves for the abuse. If I had not worn that short skirt, if I had not talked back to him, if I had not gotten a job, if I had not. So they, because most women from traditional cultures are socialized to assume the role of being a partner or a wife, to be subservient to the husband. They generally think it must be something that they have done that caused them to do that. Or they may have children and they may not want their children not to have a father in the home. So if they report the case, then the husband will be taken out of the home, and they're afraid of that. They don't want their husband to be, or their children's father, quote-unquote, to be put in jail. Or, of course, there is the issue of airing the family's dirty laundry in public. So there's a feeling of shame, a general feeling of shame about reporting such a thing or being victimized, all of that associated with shame. And the cultural beliefs. And the cultural beliefs that in the Ethiopian culture, at least, it's said that a man only hits a woman if he cares about her, if he loves her. If he doesn't care, he wouldn't hit her. So there is this confusing message that is being sent to them, and some buy into that idea.
Well, that is very interesting. So that, is that Hayako?
Yes, if I may add something, like Ms. Amelia said, the culture plays a big role, but also in our community, Ethiopian culture, I think, you know, divorce is a taboo topic than domestic violence. So if people speak up and if, you know, that might break, you know, that there is a divorce, so they don't want people to know that they are going through divorce. So that is, that plays a big role. Also religion, you know, not wanting to break the family or not to break the vows that they exchange in front of God. So I think the culture and the religion plays a big role in that too.
Yeah.
Well, you both have described so many reasons why particularly a woman might be afraid to acknowledge or report domestic violence or physical abuse. How can you encourage someone to overcome these fears of shame, religion, blaming themselves? How can they overcome these things to address a problem that may be going on for months or years?
Yeah. One of the biggest things to consider in this is that women stay in their abusive relationships, as we said, for multiple reasons. And the other, you know, one of the larger or the bigger thing is that there is a lack of information in the community, in the Ethiopian community, about how to access services. And there is a lack of support system around such issues in all immigrant communities, because if a woman was going to leave her marriage, she would by and large be leaving her community. So there is a sense of being ostracized from the community or that support system that she has. So that's really the one of the larger reasons, the bigger reasons that women remain in this abusive relationship. About how to encourage people, I, by and large, stay, you know, shy away from that because in their abusive relationships, the men or their abusers generally make decisions for them. I tend to simply offer options in that if they open up and talk with me about having been abused, I offer options to them. I stay away from making decisions for them because that's a form of abuse. We sort of perpetrate a level of abuse by doing that for them. So what we could do is remain available to them for when they're ready to make these decisions and do not push them in any direction. But make information available to them and stay available for when they need our help and support them in the way that they want to be supported, not the way that we want them to be supported in that. For example, we shouldn't encourage a woman to leave her marriage if that's not what she wants to do. However, we can help her develop a safety plan as to what she could do the next time the abuse takes place, how she can keep safe. We can give her phone numbers, she can call. and things like that. Does that answer your question?
So, well, these are there's a very difficult situations and difficult decisions that people have to make, and you don't want to pressure people to make these kinds of decisions. You want to offer options about how they might deal with the situation as it continues, if it continues. What are some ways that you might suggest? You mentioned a safety plan. What are some other ways that, particularly a woman, we'll talk about other types of abuse as well, but we're talking mostly now about women being abused by men or husbands or, I guess, other relationships. What kinds of things can you suggest to them, aside from just reporting it, to deal with a situation like this?
Well, one of the ways that they can keep themselves safe is to identify the triggers, the things that trigger the abuser to act in a violent way. And when they feel and sense that, to act on it in the most appropriate way to make themselves safe. Meaning, if they have to lock themselves in a room and call somebody, that's fine. Or if they could tell people, if abuse is occurring in the home, you know, the biggest thing in this relationship is that people, women or victims, do not really talk about what's happening to them in the home. One of the biggest things is that they don't tell because they don't know who to tell. But they can tell, you know, a doctor or a nurse or a neighbor or a school teacher or anybody they who can link them to services, they can tell. Or they can simply call 911 if they have that option.
So it sounds like the first step is to acknowledge that there's some type of violence going on, whether it's physical or psychological, and to find someone you trust to talk to about it, either a health professional. What about talking to family members or friends?
That's a great thing to tell family members or friends if they find them to be supportive. But, however, in immigrant or traditional cultures, families by and large would encourage women to endure the abuse because this is their husband, this is their children's father, and they shouldn't talk about it. They shouldn't tell others about it, or there are religious factors that come into it, and they may not get the support that they need. However, if they feel supported by their family members, that should be their first place where they seek help.
I can understand, Amelia, that these are very tough decisions, and you could risk breaking up the family, you could risk losing economic support, losing social support from the family, the broader family. But isn't there a line that people need to draw about a domestic violence? I mean, shouldn't people not accept being abused as a person? Is there a line that people you think people should draw?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is, you know, people should draw a line, and they should have the understanding that nobody owns their body. Their body is theirs. No one can beat them or rape them or minimize them or any of that. However, saying that is one thing. Saying it in the way that we're saying it one thing is one thing, but believing it and then understanding what that means and then acting on those beliefs are different, you know, is a different thing altogether. In that women who have been, who come from traditional cultures, as we said before, may have this female gender role understanding and where they put family harmony ahead of themselves. And in that they feel this is what they're supposed to do. This is what they have to endure in order to keep the family intact. Creating that understanding of self-respect and knowing one's own power, understanding one's own power, comes from a place of A, culture, B, education, C, you know, available support systems, feeling safe in the community, and things like that. And if we come from a culture where violence is accepted, it becomes very difficult for women to understand that. But you are absolutely right that people need to understand, the victims do need to understand where they begin and end, and where their partners begin and end, and how they come together as a family or as partners, and then that they should not be victimized by anybody.
Ms. Amelia, can you, Jeff, sorry. Ms. Amelia, can you please talk about the honeymoon phase in the cycle of abuse? Because I think that plays a role, like in a way, like where abusers apologize for what happened and like women tend to stay for that. Can you talk about that, please?
Yes. Generally, this is this happens where a husband or wife or a boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, they get into a relationship, and the person, there are often telltale signs about the abuse, an abuser's behavior. You know, somebody who is controlling, who is pushy, who is whatever, is likely, his behavior is likely to escalate. But whenever something happens and the woman is unhappy, he would turn around and apologize, and there is flowers, there is chocolate, there is perfume and jewelry and whatever after abuse or after a rape or after, you know, some kind of catastrophic event. And then that period, he apologizes, she accepts the apology, and then everything goes back to their normal functioning, and then things go back to being abusive again. And this is why I was saying earlier that the women need to know what the triggers are, you know, what the telltale signs are as to when things are going to happen to them. I often tell women to trust their gut feeling when they first meet a man or when they first feel uncomfortable about a relationship, to trust their gut feeling, and that to also know that this honeymoon phase is just that. There will be a period of abuse and then a period of apology. She accepts the apology, and things go back to normal, and then it starts over again. So oftentimes in the literature suggests that women try to leave this abusive relationship at least 6 times prior to them finally making the decision to leave. And a part of the reason they go through this cycle,
a woman could actually go through this cycle of abuse several times before being able to kind of draw that line and say enough is enough. That's a lot of abuse.
That's a lot of abuse, yes. Yeah, a part of it has to do because of the financial control in the home, or they have no place to go, or they're afraid for their children. There are many ways people stay in their abusive relationship and justify it. It's the way they're staying.
Well, in a minute, we'll open up the line for calls, and you just call the number 646-595-4742, and then dial 1 to get Denise on the line. But let me just ask you before opening the line, we're talking mostly about violence from between a man toward a woman. Are there also, does domestic violence also include, is a man sometimes abused by the woman? And what about children? At what point is domestic violence, in, you know, toward children or elderly, you know, reach the point to be considered domestic violence?
There are many reported cases, not as many as women's reported cases, but there are many reported cases where men are being abused by female partners. And oftentimes there is there abuse of children in the home. In an abusive home, generally children are also abused. I know about cases, Ethiopian cases, where if the man comes home or the woman comes home and she's in that abusive state, that it's not only the adults who get beaten, it's also the children, that nobody can do anything right, so they're all going to be beaten that day. Elder abuse does occur in our community. It has been reported in some cases, particularly with isolation and economic insecurity, keeping their legal papers from them, keeping them as babysitters and homemakers, you know, as servants in the home. As I said earlier, you know, the general definition of the abusive behavior is that aggression or coercive behavior, which includes physical and sexual abuse, but it's not always physical and sexual abuse. There is emotional abuse towards elders and children in the home. The behavioral pattern is the same. An abuser is an abuser, period. Abuse is a power and control issue. It's not a personality disorder. It's not anything like that. It's a power and control issue, getting people to submit to one's will. That's what it is about.
Well, let's thank you so much, Amelia. Let's see if we can open up the line. Denise, do we have any callers on the line at 646-595-4743?
We don't have anyone yet. And when you do call in, please don't forget to press 1 if you would like to speak.
Well, okay, let's continue this very important conversation. And Heiko, please feel free to ask some questions yourself. But let me ask actually both of you, what resources are there available? If somebody's going through domestic violence, where can they go for help? Where should they start?
They can call in DC metro area, they can call 911. They can go to any emergency room and tell a nurse or a doctor. And if they're children, they can tell their teachers. They can tell their school counselors or anybody else, any adult that they trust can help them. They can tell them. As far as organizations go, there aren't any organizations put together to address strictly domestic violence issues in the D.C. metro area for immigrant, African immigrants. However, there are domestic violence organizations that will be able to link them to appropriate services. We have recently created an organization called the Person Center to help African immigrant survivors of domestic violence and war trauma, because a lot of African immigrants are war trauma survivors.
So if it's like an emergency or it's very, you know, immediate crisis, then a person could call 911 or go to the emergency room. Otherwise, they could discuss it with their healthcare provider. Or what about going for mental health services? Hayako, could you speak to that?
Yes. I can let me give our audience the National Domestic Violence Hotline. I can repeat it later on toward the end, but it's 1-800-799-7233. And there are several services, especially for, I know, that for Virginia, Maryland, D.C. residents. And, you know, there are places they can call. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of, like, getting online and just Googling information. There are several services. But for D.C. residents, they can call the Domestic Violence Intake Center. It's the number 202-561-300. And for Maryland residents, they can call Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence. It's 301-352-4574. And for Virginia residents, they can call the Women's Center. It's 703-281-2657. And I can repeat the numbers towards the end of the show.
Okay, that's great. So you could Google. Okay, you could. We'll take that call 1 second. But you can Google domestic violence in your state, or get the national number, and you'll repeat some of those numbers toward the end of the show. That's great. So we have a caller on the line. Please go ahead. Thanks.
Hi, I have actually a couple of questions. One is for the guests. Are there any generational differences? Do you think the younger generation, you know, put up with domestic violence as versus with the older generation? And two, can you tell us any success stories? I mean, where people have said enough is enough and you know, get out of that relationship and continue to live a, you know, normal and productive life.
Those are very good questions. Thank you, Carl. Go ahead, Amelia.
Yeah, generational gaps. There may be some generational gaps in that it's a little less reported among the older generation of the expat community here. Among Ethiopians. The abuse, however, occurs both in the younger and older generation. As far as success stories go, we have had a lot of women who have worked with us and they have gone through the counseling program. And they leave the home, and some of them came to us from shelters, domestic violence shelters, and we helped them through finding a job or linking them to services where they could get some kind of job training so that they can make themselves economically secure, and they are put in transitional housing programs, and counseling is provided to them and their children, and they are linked to services where the children are put into after-school programs so that the women can work successfully outside of the home and be able to provide for themselves and their children live a safe life out in the community. Yes.
So many, as you describe success stories or cases, women who have gotten out of an abusive situation, maybe going to a shelter first and building a new life on their own and being successful in doing so. What about dealing with the violence within the family? What are some successes that you've seen where women dealt with the issue without necessarily leaving the family? Can you describe any situations like that?
Yes. In those cases generally are done with mediation. A few cases that I've worked on, we used their preference of mediation style, in that they brought in people from the church or their family members, and the therapist sits there, and there is a mediation process that goes through, and some people went on for months to meet once every month and continue to discuss the issues, and the elders took the abuser under their wing and sort of counseled them and supported them in being able to make healthier choices, in being able to communicate their needs and being able to change their behavior so that the family system stayed intact. In those situations, also children were provided with a separate counseling program, because the children adapt very quickly to the newer culture, the United States culture, and in that they're not very responsive to this collective counseling and religious mediation thing. They're not very responsive to that. However, if they have a safe person to talk to and they are given ways of dealing with their abuse, they become very successful.
Jeff,
hello?
Yes, go ahead, Ayiko. Go ahead.
How are children who grow up or witness domestic violence in their household impacted by it?
Domestic violence among children, or how they are impacted, their self-esteem is impacted severely. They a lot of them report fear, and they themselves become very violent in the school. Among their peers, they a lot of them report nightmare and ability to focus at school. There are levels of depression that they suffer from. There's a sense of shame that they experience in the home, in being able to bring people to their home, you know, their friends to their home, and so forth. They're impacted negatively, of course. For some, their schoolwork suffers, and some do not make friends, so they become socially isolated. So those are some of the ways in which they're impacted.
Is our caller still online? Did we answer your questions? We have another caller on the line. Go ahead.
Okay, and I think that that caller dropped, so we will get them back on momentarily.
Okay. I do want to follow up on what you were saying, Amelia, about going through a mediation process, getting help with the problem in the home. Is what kind of hope can a woman have who's suffering from an abusive situation? What kind of hope that they can have that the situation will change, that the abuse will stop? Can you offer some hope to women that are going through this kind of struggle?
Women, if they were going to take charge of their situation, and then that find that one person they trust and they can tell their story, talk about what's happening to them in the home, there is a whole lot of help out there for them where people can step in and help them. And even if they wanted to go through this mediation process, there is a way to get out of their abusive relationship or their abusive situation, in that they can take control of the abuse in the home and their own life. This is happening throughout the United States, people are able to get out of abusive relationships or go through the mediation process to change their situation. And there's a lot of legal advocacy available to them. They do not have to remain in their abusive situation.
So there's help out there, and there's hope that they could overcome the situation at home, or if necessary, they can make it on their own if that's necessary to get out of an abusive, violent situation.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask, if you're a family member or a friend and you suspect that there may be some kind of violence going on, maybe you've seen some signs, you've seen bruises, you've seen kind of unexplained, you know, physical symptoms or even psychological symptoms, how would you go about approaching a family member or a friend about something like that?
As I said earlier, I encourage people to make themselves available and stay away from encouraging, in that if they leave the door open, they will eventually talk, you know, they will, if they feel safe and they make the people feel safe, the victim, if they make the victim feel safe, they will eventually talk to them about it. But pushing them or prying information out of them would resemble the type of abuse that they're experiencing. So I would make myself available. I'll share stories that I know about the types of things that are happening out in the community and how people are getting help. Depending on the level of relationship that you have with the person, you can get them to confide in you by simply being trustworthy and making yourself available to interact with them in the way that they want you to interact with them and no more.
So, first of all, you would just try to communicate that it's okay to talk about this.
Right.
You know, that it's, this is something that is important to talk about, and it's okay, and hopefully there's enough trust that a person can begin to share what's going on, and then you can encourage them or direct them to the help that they might need.
Right. Right. In the Ethiopian community, a lot of anecdotal information becomes very useful, you know, instead of directly saying, I see this bruise and on you and I have seen it before and you've said, you know, this and the other last time, I think your husband or boyfriend is hitting you. To say things like, you know, I saw such and thus thing and this person went to this place and was able to get this kind of help. And simply just sharing anecdotal information with the person would be much more useful. That way they don't feel that you do not touch that place of shame, that you don't touch that place of secrecy for them, and then they just retract into a shell and they would not come out and tell you.
I see. Well, this is a very, very challenging issue too. When somebody's going through abusive situation, we've spoken in previous shows about the issue of the stress and pressure of families that have, you know, immigrated to America from Ethiopia, from other countries. There are so many stressors, so many pressures that could lead to depression, anxiety. Can these things also lead to domestic violence? And can it be stress-related, or is it more of the person's personality? How do you address that?
these things could lead to domestic violence. There is a high level of mental disorders, particularly post-traumatic stress disorder, among immigrants who are survivors of war trauma. And in the case of Ethiopians, there is a lot of unresolved issues from the time of the Red Terror in Ethiopia, where people have experienced a lot of direct trauma or vicarious trauma and has gone on untreated because mental health is by and large a taboo subject in the Ethiopian community. So, yes, there is that piece of it. But migration in itself has a level of stress, as you say, that it creates. And a lot of people, when they migrate from their traditional cultures to an industrial culture like the United States, they lose a lot of their socially ascribed positions in that the children, for example, become the power brokers in the home, where the man who was at one point a breadwinner and a powerful person will become dependent on the child to negotiate with systems. So this creates a power disparity and a level of anxiety and perhaps depression, and people may act on it, on that, in a violent way.
They've witnessed, they may have experienced or witnessed violence in their own life, back home or growing up, and that becomes a coping mechanism for some people.
For some people, there is that too, yes. If they have experienced that in the home, it's likely that they are caught in the cycle of violence and that they were abused or they have witnessed abuse, and that's how they view relationships to function. Therefore, they would act in that way when they are having their own relationships in their own families. In that case, however, it's difficult to attribute that to a mental disorder. That's by and large a behavioral issue and likely a control issue, in that people feel empowered by doing that, by abusing others to submit to their will.
There's one thing that's kind of bothering me about how you've explained when someone presents that they've gone through abusive situation, physical or psychological abuse, and you want to be careful not to pressure them to make decisions. You want to offer options to them. But on the other hand, it seems to me that you want to tell people you don't have to be abused. You know, this is not something that a person needs to tolerate in their life. You shouldn't have to tolerate physical abuse or emotional abuse, psychological abuse. There's a basic human right that everyone has not to be abused, it seems to me.
I agree, and you're absolutely right. But if the person does not feel abused in that relationship, I think the responsibility lies in you creating the awareness about what it is that they're experiencing, as opposed to making decisions for them. So defining what they're experiencing is a very important thing for them to identify it as an abuse, as abuse,
yes.
As opposed to, you know, what I said earlier, where you tell them you have a right not to be abused. Yes, you're absolutely right. They have a right not to be abused, but they have to see what's happening to them as abuse in order for that to make sense. Does that make sense?
Right. Well, that's why, yes, and this why a program like this is so helpful for people to hear about these kinds of issues and to understand that, you know, what is abuse and what can you do about it. And I think you've given an excellent description of that. Hayeko, would you like to add anything to that?
No, she said it all.
Can you repeat the numbers for resources that are available?
Sure. The National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-7233. That's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. For listeners who live in Washington, D.C., they can call Domestic Violence Intake Center. The number is 202-561-3000. And for listeners who live in Maryland, they can call Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence. The number is 301-352-4574. And for Virginia residents, they can call the Women's Center. The number is 703-281-2657.
Okay, thank you. So there are many resources available. Okay, we have one more caller on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Hoffman, Ms.
Yes.
Eldis. This is Kenfa.
Hello, Kenfa.
Hi, how are you? This is a very crucially important topic, really, that is being discussed. And I have no doubt that many will benefit, really, from listening the discussion that you and Ms. Eldis have been giving. There are a couple
Thank
of
you.
Comments and questions I have regarding children. I think it was quite very nicely explained that children will be affected in very many ways. May not be directly from the physical abuse itself, which definitely can occur also, and there is no way that we can exclude that. But the day-to-day observation of the abuse that is occurring is, as you said, very highly traumatic. In the pediatric services, we do go through those issues to find out what the nature of relationships are and how it relates to the children's behavioral changes and social interactions, and also the bigger children, how do they resolve conflicts themselves and whether they will be abusive. These issues are so crucially important, and I'm glad that it was really very much very nicely explained. The other issue is the, Dr. Hoffman, you mentioned about the abuser, whether mentally intact, whether there are issues really that relate. So one of the reasons why, let's say if they are wives or partners that are being abused, for them to know really where their rights are, it would also help the other partner, really, if there are mental illnesses that are involved, for that person to be helped in a way if it is recognized. There are Ethiopian community associations in quite very many cities, and I think one that it would be of a great help if those associations, just like most of the time, to do talks on empowerment, also get in touch with ladies who are likely will be abused or who may not have been abused already, but it is likely that will happen, to give them, to make them aware of what is going on and what their rights are. So,
thank you so much. That brings up a couple of points. Amelia, are there support groups for women who are suffering from domestic violence, other women who have been going through the same thing?
The places like my sister's place and House of Ruth have support groups. The problem is, A, language barrier for women from other cultures to participate in the support groups and benefit from them. And the other is the accessibility of those support groups to women from traditional cultures. The organization I talked about earlier, the Person Center that we're trying to put together, we're putting together now, is organized to create the support system in the traditional way within the grassroots organizations where it meets the cultural acceptability of the members of the community. But yes, support groups are crucial and they're very important for women to have them so that they feel supported in the community and to talk about it. I want to go back to the issue of mental illness in the abuser community. As I said earlier, there is, there may be underlying mental health issues, as you had mentioned, depression or anxiety, or of course, post-traumatic stress disorder. But in most cases, the abuser can be passive or what we call, quote-unquote, a nice person who is generous to others and very sensitive. But only when they come home is where that abusive behavior appears, whether it's verbal, emotional, economic, psychological, or sexual abuse only occurs in the home. They are otherwise respected community members outside of the home. So I would like for people to think about, how we make excuses for people with abusive behaviors, and that patriarchy as a system has perpetrated abuse against women for an extended period of time. And we need to keep that in mind as we're talking about domestic violence.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Dr. Kinfe, for your comments. And definitely we want to be aware, as you're saying, that, in some of our cultural systems, we perpetuate domestic violence in some ways by having maybe too tolerant of a view. And as I mentioned before, and in my view anyway, I think you have to draw a line. Everyone has a right not to be abused. I want to make a couple of announcements before we close our show. And also, Dr. Kinfe, I wanted to thank you for your comment about the effect on the children. And I think we should dedicate a whole program to the issue of child abuse and go into more depth on dealing with that issue specifically. So we'll plan that for one of our future shows. So I just want to make a couple of announcements. Again, this show is Taboo No More, a production of One World Communications and association with People to People. And speaking of People to People, there are a couple of events coming up. This Saturday in Silver Spring, Maryland, there's a special program on Saturday, April 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. Dr. Fekada Fulas, a clinical pharmacist and a recognized authority on Ethiopian traditional medicine, an author of many books and articles, will be doing a book signing ceremony at Gibata Restaurant at 8123 Georgia Avenue in Silver Spring. That's this Saturday from 2 to 4. You can get more information on the P2P website. Next week, the program from People to People will be hosted by Dr. Antina Hapte, and he will host Kathy Dickinson, the COO for People to People, and Ted Alimahu, founder and president of U.S. Doctors for Africa, to discuss the Pan-African Health Professional Conference, which will be held in Addis Ababa in from May 21st to May 23rd. So that will be next Thursday evening show. I want to thank our guest, Amelia Miscellides. Your knowledge and depth of knowledge on domestic violence is clearly very superior, and we really appreciate the education, the information, the insights that you've shared with us tonight. I think all of our listeners will greatly benefit and appreciate that. Thanks to my co-host, Hayako Gezachu, and our radio engineer, Denise Speaks. So this is Dr. Jeff Hoffman signing off tonight from Addis Ababa. And thank you very much, and hopefully you'll join us next month for another program of Taboo No More. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.